Catch a full replay of the following show and many more previews and breakdowns of both bowl games and NFL games on GameDaySportsRadio.com. Welcome to Inside the Numbers. I'm your host, Boji Wood, and for the next 60 minutes, we'll take a look at all the big bowl games this weekend. We'll look at the Fiesta, the Orange, the Peach, the Citrus, and of course, the Rose and the Sugar. And we'll do all that when we come back after this quick break on Inside the Numbers.
You're listening to Inside the Numbers with Boji Wood. Catch a replay of this show at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Hear interviews with coaches as well as current and former players, plus previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games. It's all at GameDaySportsRadio.com. That's GameDaySportsRadio.com.
And welcome back into Inside the Numbers. It's Boji Wood. Now we're joined by Mike Bernard from OTM Sports. Mike, a lot of good bowl games being played this coming week. We've already had some exciting games. I think it's only going to get better.
I do too, Coach. And a lot of the games, you know, everyone knows about the playoff games. They get a lot of attention, of course, and all the New Year's Day games. But one game we're going to talk about in a moment is the Fiesta Bowl, and it doesn't get as much press as I think it should be.
I agree with you there. This game kicks off at 4 p.m. on Saturday from Glendale. Pitts, Washington of the Pac-12 against Penn State of the Big Ten. Both teams finished the regular season 10-2. Penn State's two losses were by 1 point and 3 points, both on the road. Of course, they lost a huge lead at Ohio State, and then they lost the weather game at Michigan State, where it was almost 4-hour weather delay, and they just never really got back in sync there. And Michigan State pulled that one out in basically what amounted to was an empty stadium. The Huskies, both their losses were by only one score. These teams are a couple away from being unbeaten and probably conference champions and maybe even playing in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, no question. You're right. Both teams lost close games on the road in conference play. I feel like they're both really solid teams. And as I said before, they haven't been talked about much. And if one play for either Washington or Penn State goes the other way, they both would have been playing in championship games, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten.
On paper, this game's a good matchup. Washington, they sport the number two run defense in the country. Penn State, of course, they've relied heavily on the run game. Just in their last couple of games, they ran for over 550 yards. Now, Saquon Barkley, he didn't end the year with the Heisman-type numbers that he had early on, but he still ran for over 1,100 yards and accounted for 20 touchdowns.
Yeah, that kid's great. He can do it all. He's great in the return game as well. Penn State, they've committed to the run. They averaged 34 rush attempts per game, but really, and you've seen it, the offensive line was ineffective in the big games. As for Washington, I believe this year's team is actually stronger than the 2016 team that went to the college football playoff. They just lost two close games on the road, so therefore they're not in consideration. The defense only gave up 15 points a game this year. That's even better than last year, three less.
Both these head coaches, Chris Peterson for Washington, James Franklin for Penn State, I think they're two of the more solid coaches in college football. They know how to establish a program, but they also know how to maintain that program. Go back and look at Peterson, what he did at Boise State. Had many opportunities to leave, but he waited for the right opportunity. Finally left for Washington a few seasons ago. Franklin, he was the coach in waiting at Maryland back when Ralph Regan was the head coach, and didn't want to stick around. The Vandy job came open. A lot of people thought that he was foolish for leaving Maryland, taking the Vandy job. But again, he took the Commodores to heights that they hadn't experienced. Back-to-back 9-win seasons, 3 straight bowls, and won 2 of those. And now at Penn State, he's got them back into the national conversation and in a positive way.
That's right, Coach. And before I go into some numbers, let me ask you this. Where do you rank James Franklin? Because, again, kind of like when we talk about Coach Bill Snyder, what he's accomplished, and you mentioned that there was the trepidation and the concern about going to Vanderbilt because, look, not to be ugly, but Vanderbilt's a black hole in college football. It's hard to win there. But James Franklin not only went to Vanderbilt and pulled off what he did there, he also went to Penn State that had all that turmoil, and he turned that game around. And remember, he didn't have 4- and 5-star players when he first got to Penn State.
No, he took what Bill O'Brien started. Bill O'Brien really needs credit for the foundation that was laid at Penn State. But Franklin came in and has rebuilt that program and doing all the right things. I think he is a lifer at Penn State. I think that's the job that he will retire from. Or I think if Penn State's smart, they'll make sure that's the job that he retires from.
Yeah, I would, because remember, when all that the legal issues at Penn State happened, a lot of his players were free to leave and not have to waste a year on the transfer, and he still won. So I agree with you there. A couple of numbers, Coach. Penn State, they're a great spread team out in Vegas. 16 wins, 4 losses, 2 pushes against the spread their last 22. So that means whether they're on the road, at home, they get the job done. Of Penn State's 10 wins this year, all but one was lopsided. Washington, they're 22-4 under Chris Peterson the last 2 years, and Peterson's teams are 5-2 their last 7 bowl games, so they get it done in postseason. Penn State's a small favorite. Most sharps are staying away from this game because it's just too close to call.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll take a look at the Orange Bowl, Wisconsin and Miami on Inside the Numbers.
The best in sports talk and analysis is at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Every week, Mike Menard and longtime college coach Boji Wood break down the biggest matchups in both college football and the NFL. GameDaySportsRadio.com features interviews with top coaches, as well as current and former players. Get all the information you want in one place, GameDaySportsRadio.com. Previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games are just a click away at GameDaySportsRadio.com.
Welcome back into Inside the Numbers. We're going to take a look now at the Orange Bowl. That's going to be played Saturday night, 8 p.m. kick on ESPN. From down in, I don't know, what is it, Hard Rock Stadium now? Mike Menard, it's been Joe Robbie Stadium, Pro Player Park. I don't know what it is now, but where the Dolphins play, that's where the Orange Bowl will be played. It's Wisconsin and Miami. Wisconsin, the Big Ten runner-up. Miami, the ACC runner-up. These teams last met back in the 2009 Champ Sports Bowl in Orlando, and the Badgers won that game 20-14.
Right, and talk about the stadium. We've both been in that stadium, and it's, you know, not the greatest venue, but we've seen worse. But it seems to have a new name. It seems every other couple of years. This game, caught my eye right when it point spread came out, Coach. The game is in Miami. Wisconsin, they really didn't garner respect all year from odds makers. And now they open the Badgers as a touchdown favorite in Miami. Without handicapping any other factors, the line itself tells me that Wisconsin's going to take care of business here.
You look at what the Badgers did in the Big Ten championship game against Ohio State. I think Ohio State played probably about as well as they could play. I think Wisconsin was a little bit overwhelmed by being in that atmosphere. At least they didn't get blown out 59-0 like they did a few years ago. But Miami, last couple of games, they just looked bad. There's no other way to describe it. Early on in the season, they were playing with tons of confidence. Didn't matter where they were ahead, behind. They just kept playing and seemed to find a way to win. But at Pitt, in their last regular season game, they lost by 10, still had a chance to win that one late. But then they go play Clemson in the ACC championship game, and Clemson just beat them. Beat them bad, 38-3. Hurricanes had made their living off creating turnovers. They won the turnover battle in every game until the ACC title game against Clemson. To have a chance against the Badgers in the Orange Bowl, they need to get back on track, start forcing turnovers, and stop shooting themselves in the foot offensively.
Yeah, agreed. Pittsburgh pounded them with the run. And look, we both know Wisconsin can run it as well as any team in the Power Five. When I take a look at the point spread, again, I mentioned it earlier, point spread, numbers, and all the trends point to Wisconsin. The Badgers have covered 10 of their last 11 road games. Miami's covered only one of their last six bowl games. And they've had trouble with the Big Ten teams in the past. I'm going to go with Wisconsin here, but I'd like to get your thoughts, Coach.
I kind of like the Badgers also. It's hard to believe both of these teams were playing for a spot in the playoffs just a few weeks ago, and now they're kind of, you know, delegated to go down to the Orange Bowl and play. But I think that this has the potential to be a good game. However, I think if Wisconsin, if they stay committed to the run game and try and don't get too fancy, I think they will win. You go back and you look at the turnovers that Miami created defensively. Over three-quarters of those turnovers were created on interceptions or fumbles after a pass completion. I think that says it all. Miami's strong point is not stopping the run. I think that's what Wisconsin's going to have to do is establish the line of scrimmage and keep running the ball. If they do that, I think they win. If they try to get laissez-faire and start throwing the ball all over the place, which I don't know why in the world they would, that's just going to allow Miami to stay in the game.
Yeah, and look, not knocking the kid, but Hornibrook is not the best passer, you know, that we've seen in college football. He's had some bad games. He's made some bad throws. But why even throw it? I know sometimes you have to throw to set up the run and to keep the defense honest based off of things that you and other coaches have pointed out to me. But here's the thing. If Wisconsin is patient and hold on to the ball, I don't think playing in Miami is going to be a disadvantage because, again, we've talked about it in the past. The Miami fans, the community of Miami, they don't have that many alumni and fans that show up each and every week, but they show up to the big games, and I really don't think after Miami losing two games that the fans are going to come out and support them.
No, the closest thing that Miami had this year to the old-timey Orange Bowl crowds that they used to have when that place would just be rocking was the Notre Dame game. And, of course, they took care of business there. And then also Virginia Tech. But really, you got that old-time Miami Hurricane swagger feeling when they played Notre Dame. And I agree with you. I don't think they're going to show up in mass. I think this is going to be a very docile crowd, so to speak. I think they're going to be there just for the entertainment. I think that the crowd will start thinning out probably right about after the half, no matter who's winning, because as we both know, a large part of the Orange Bowl is the halftime festivities, and that has been something that has been a huge part of the Orange Bowl. And, you know, when you have national championship games like they used to have in the Orange Bowl, yeah, people are staying around. But for two teams that were really runners-up in their own conference, I don't think the crowd's going to be a factor in this one way or the other.
Yeah, and I don't either. And the other thing is, earlier I mentioned that Wisconsin hasn't gotten respect out in Vegas all year, and that's because they don't do anything fancy. They just run the ball, you know, 3-4 yards, cloud of dust, and that's going to – I think that also will lend to your point that the crowd will leave early.
Right, and listen, all they've got to do is run the ball, and they should be able to take care of the Hurricanes. We'll take a quick break and be right back. You're listening to Inside the Numbers.
You're listening to Inside the Numbers with Boji Wood. Catch a replay of this show at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Hear interviews with coaches as well as current and former players, plus previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games. It's all at GameDaySportsRadio.com. That's GameDaySportsRadio.com.
Over in Atlanta, New Year's Day, January the 1st, it's the Peach Bowl. Auburn coming in at 10-3, Central Florida 12-0. Of course, this is the group of five representatives, Central Florida, getting to play one of the big boys in the Power Five. Again, the big boys throwing the little boys a bone. Listen, yeah. I think this game is going to be a lot closer than a lot of people expect. The Knights are coming in 12-0. Head coach Scott Frost, he's taken the Nebraska job, going back home to his alma mater, but he and the entire staff have stayed on, and they're coaching the Knights in this game.
Yeah, Coach, and to me that says a lot about Frost, the players, and the administration. They all put egos aside, and I feel it gives them the best chance in this Peach Bowl. I like it, but from a coach's standpoint, does it make sense to you?
There's really no easy answer when you're in this predicament, and it's become commonplace, though, over the last decade or so in major college football. Hats off to all the parties here, though, especially Bill Moos, the new Nebraska AD that came over from Washington State. I don't think I've ever seen a major coaching change handle with such grace and class from both Central Florida and Nebraska in all of this. I think this is going to bode well for the Knights as they get ready to play Auburn.
Well, first of all, I agree with you, and you know we've taken some shots, not personal shots, but we've certainly pointed out that Nebraska, after firing Frank Solich and hiring Bill Callahan and on, maybe this is the right guy to, the new AD is the right guy to turn things around there. You talk about Central Florida. Their defense gave up a lot of points their last two games to South Florida and Memphis. But prior to those games, they were shutting teams down. They had some injuries on that side of the ball, and now we see some of those players are closer to full speed. Auburn had some injuries as well and some key injuries. Cam Pettway missed basically half or more than half the year. Running back Kerryon Johnson, he was playing in pain in that SEC championship game. I actually see where Johnson is listed as probable for this game.
Well, Johnson, he shouldn't play in this game. He's not healthy. He was hurt. He shouldn't have been on the field in the SEC championship game. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around that one. There's no way that kid was even remotely ready to play in that SEC championship game. I guarantee you this much, had that been Mercer they were playing, the kid wouldn't have been on the field. But I will say this, he wouldn't have been any more effective against Mercer than he was against Georgia. I think it was a travesty to have that young man suited up and put him out there and put him at even more risk.
Well, Coach, first of all, we like the courage and the commitment of the kid, but the coaches sometimes, adults, they have to go step in and say, look, you're going to have to sit this one out. No matter what the consequences are, how big the game is. And listen, I get it. Auburn faced one of the toughest gauntlets in college football history to end a season. The final 3 weeks of that year, of this year, they beat number one Georgia. Then they beat number one Alabama. Then they had to face Georgia a second time with their best player, in my opinion, Johnson, maybe at 50%. Now, the question I have is, after all those huge games, the magnitude of those games, how much does a Peach Bowl really mean to the Auburn players?
That's hard to answer, especially when you're not around the team on a daily basis. You can get a better feel for what their intensity level is and what their focus level is. Different teams respond to different situations in different ways. There's just no certain pieces of the puzzle that fit together all the time. You never know. But I do know this much. If Auburn doesn't come into this game and ready to play and focus, then the Knights, they may get a tiger on their lance to take back to Orlando.
Yeah, look, Coach, we can look back at 10-year, 20-year recent history. These quote, group of five teams, when they get a chance to show they belong and the Power Five team is not really all that excited to be there, it doesn't bode well for the Power Five team. A couple of numbers. First number is the number 12. Scott Frost took a team that was 0-12 2 years ago. Now they're 12-0, an incredible turnaround. Nebraska, I think, as we talked about, they might have finally found their guy in Frost. Central Florida, they've only played in one New Year's Day bowl game. It was in 2014. They were playing a Power 5 team. They were a 17-point underdog to Baylor, and the Knights won that game outright by 10. This game pits mid-major or group of five versus a Power 5 team that was a win away from the playoffs. History shows that Power 5 team covers less than 40% of the time in this type scenario, and sometimes they lose outright like Baylor did.
I think that Central Florida's got all the tools to come in and take care of Auburn, especially if Auburn thinks they're just going to win this strictly on athletic ability. I don't know that I like the Knights to win straight up, but again, I think this is going to be a very close game. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, look at the Citrus Bowl, LSU and Notre Dame.
The best in sports talk and analysis is at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Every week, Mike Menard and longtime college coach Boji Wood break down the biggest matchups in both college football and the NFL. GameDaySportsRadio.com features interviews with top coaches, as well as current and former players. Get all the information you want in one place. GameDaySportsRadio.com. Previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games are just a click away at GameDaySportsRadio.com.
Welcome back. Let's take a look at the Citrus Bowl. It's going to kick New Year's Day at 1 o'clock on ABC. LSU, Notre Dame, both of them are 9-3. These schools have faced each other five times since 1997. I actually remember the first time that they met each other back in the early 70s. Burt Jones was the quarterback for LSU. Listen to that game on the radio. That tells you how old I am, Mike Menard. Listen, but four of those five meetings, they've been in bowl games, and each team has two wins. In 1997, they actually met twice. Notre Dame beat LSU 27-6 in the regular season, and then LSU won the rematch in the bowl game by a score of 27-9. I like it when these two teams play. I think it's always pretty even.
Yeah, and Vegas agrees with that, this being an even matchup. You talked about listening to that game on the radio. You know, the kids today, I remember when I was a kid, we had to listen to basketball, baseball, and football games on the radio. Back in the 70s, you know, there was one or two games a day. There was no ESPN 2-3 and Fox Sports. So, yeah, we do date ourselves when we talk about that. The kids today, they watch all the games on their phone all day long. So it's a different world. I get it. But well, as you said, this is an evenly matched game. Vegas agrees. LSU is only a 3-point favorite, so it's anybody's game. Notre Dame, they were in playoff contention before losing two of their last three. The Irish had to play six straight bowl games to finish the year. I talked about the gauntlet that Auburn had to finish with. Notre Dame had a very tough ending to their season. LSU, they were sitting at 3-2 after losing to Troy at home back in late September, but they went on to win five of their last six games, got to nine wins, and they actually covered their last six games.
The Tigers probably didn't expect they'd be playing on New Year's Day after starting out 3-2. And Notre Dame, you know, they faltered down the stretch, but, you know, they did have a very challenging schedule. And look at their losses, an SEC champ Georgia, an ACC champ Miami, and Stanford, who were champs of the Pac-12 North. So when you look at those three losses, you have to say, hey, those are pretty good teams, and but they were blown out by Miami and Stanford. You know, the Georgia win was for debate up until the last minute, but Miami and Stanford, they took care of the Irish very easily.
Yeah, those games got ugly, and again, Notre Dame's, they're all about the run game. When they get behind, Wimbush doesn't have the experience yet to bring them back in the passing game. And look, I think that's the reason why LSU is favored in this game. Notre Dame was averaging about 350 rush yards per game up until their last three games, when they only ran for 142 a game. Oddsmakers, sharps, top handicappers, they think the LSU defensive front can slow down the run game, and that quarterback Brandon Wimbush hasn't shown enough ability to throw it downfield.
No, and that's one thing that head coach Brian Kelly has lacked in his time at Notre Dame, is really a premier quarterback. He's had some good ones. He's had some that should have been premier quarterbacks, but they haven't performed as a premier quarterback. You look at Coach O, he's a natural fit for LSU, but as we said, after that 3-2 start, there were a lot of folks saying, hey, have we made a mistake with Coach O? These are two coaches that have this season, both of them, have taken shots from the fans questioning where they should be in that position, but they've responded nicely. However, the latest news out of Baton Rouge is that Coach Orgeron is going to part ways with his offensive coordinator, Matt Canada. He hired him to come in and revamp the Tiger offense, paying him $1.5 million a year. Word is they're in negotiations to separate. As far as Brian Kelly, he was hired expected to deliver a national championship to Notre Dame, and he hasn't done that yet. There's a lot of heat on him, and I think the Irish need to play well in this bowl game.
I think they do need to play well. And look, expecting Notre Dame to be in the college football playoff the way it's set up now, the Power Five conferences rule everything. I think Notre Dame should take the lead on trying to get it to eight teams, because you've got five Power Conference champions. You have Notre Dame. You've got six possible teams for four spots. If Notre Dame would lobby, that would carry a lot of weight. When I take a look at Notre Dame, they've struggled in bowl games. Coach, look, when I go back and look at these numbers, I was really surprised. The last 20 years, Notre Dame has struggled in bowls. They've lost five straight New Year's Day bowl games. They are 0-10 in bowl games played in January, going back to 1995. On the other hand, conversely, LSU, they're 14-7. Their last 21 in the postseason. So very surprising to see Notre Dame having so much trouble in bowl games.
Listen, since Notre Dame tightened their admission requirements back at the end of the Lou Holtz era, they've struggled on the national stage. I mean, the evidence plays it out. When Holtz came in, they made some concessions with the admissions department. That's why he was able to get some of those great athletes in that carried those Irish to 10 and 11 and 12 wins a year, and that's what got them their last national championship. And if the Irish are ever going to win another national championship, concessions are going to have to be made in the admissions department. If not, they'll have good seasons, but they'll never be the Notre Dame of old. Let's talk about the first semifinal game, which is going to be the Rose Bowl game, kicking off at 5 p.m. Eastern. That's a 2 o'clock local time out in Pasadena. It's on ESPN. It's going to pit the 12-1 Oklahoma Sooners against the 12-1 Georgia Bulldogs. Of course, these two are conference champions, the Big 12 champion Oklahoma and the SEC champ Georgia. And this is the first time that these two schools have ever met on the gridiron. You know, the obvious matchup here is the Georgia defense trying to slow down the Sooners' offense and Heisman winner quarterback Baker Mayfield.
That's right. And, you know, also the other matchup is Oklahoma trying to stop that run game from Georgia. The Sooners average 45 a game, and they haven't scored less than 29 in any game all year. Georgia, they only give up 13 points a game, but they haven't faced a quarterback like Baker Mayfield or an offense like the Sooners. And I really don't think Georgia wants to get in a track meet in the Rose Bowl.
Not with Baker Mayfield at quarterback. He's got that Brett Favre-type presence in the pocket. He throws sidearm, underhanded, shuffles it forward, does whatever he has to do. But, you know, he's also shown that he's more than capable of running the football. He had a 54-yard touchdown run in the Big 12 championship game. I think Georgia's going to try and keep him in the pocket and bring pressure, because if he gets out on the edge, he's all kinds of trouble, both with his legs and with his arm. Georgia, they have to control time of possession, because by doing this, you keep Mayfield on the sideline and keep his big playability off of the field. And at the same time, for them to do that, the Dogs have got to get Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, and DeAndre Swift. They've got to get them to establish the run for Georgia.
I think if Georgia's going to win, they have to establish the run. The one game Georgia was down double digits was at Auburn. They were getting beat down, and freshman Jake Fromm couldn't bring them back. It was the one time he had been asked to all year. He's been solid this year, but look, he's much more effective when he uses the play action pass set up by the run game. If Georgia doesn't slow down OU and keep the points to a minimum, I think they're going to be in trouble if it's a high-scoring game.
And Kirby Smart knows that, and Lincoln Riley knows that. Of course, Lincoln Riley, the first-year head coach for the Oklahoma Sooners, he wants that track meet. He wants this thing to become basketball on grass. Kirby Smart, in his second year at Georgia, he knows that he needs to control the time of possession. He knows that he has to play to his defense to win this football game. I think one thing about both these head coaches, obviously Lincoln Riley, first year, got his team in the semifinals. However, let's take into consideration that Bob Stoops left the cupboard fully bare or fully stocked for Lincoln Riley, not bare. And the cupboard wasn't bare for Kirby Smart, but he had a couple of pieces he needed to plug in after Mark Richt left and went to Miami. And guess what? He's done it. You've got two coaches here that have been at their schools a combined 3 years playing in a semifinal game to go to the national championship game.
Yeah, that's very impressive. And Coach, I want to point out a couple of trends that we've seen the last few years in college playoff games. The offenses have outperformed the defenses. Last year, Alabama and Clemson had great defenses. The final score, 35-31. In 2015, Alabama and Clemson, again, outstanding defenses. The score was 45-40. In 2014, Ohio State beat Alabama 42-35. Both teams had great defenses. Oregon beat Florida State 59-20. The first 3 years of the playoff, offenses put up big points, and even on those great defenses.
These up-tempo offenses, they put a lot of pressure on the defense. Go back to last year, Alabama's defense was on the field for 99 plays in that loss to Clemson. Everyone was talking about Jalen Hurts didn't do this, didn't do that. The only thing Jalen Hurts didn't do last year, he scored too quick. That's the only thing. He should have scored with about 3 seconds left. That's the only thing he could have done. That defense was just gassed, and they couldn't stop Deshaun Watson and the rest of that Clemson offense.
Right, and that Alabama defense had to be one of the top three I've ever seen in college football, but they can't be on the field for 99 plays.
Totally agree with you there. One thing about, we talk about basketball on grass, that's what Oklahoma does. Listen, they have got to feel confident going in and playing another SEC team because they've had success against the SEC recently.
Yeah, they've won four straight. They covered all four. Look, they're one of the great all-time programs. They've won 46 conference championships. That's the most in all of college football on FBS. Georgia, they do good in bowl games. New Year's Day bowl games going back to 98, they're 9-3. Coach, the betting public's on Georgia. They're banking on that Georgia defense keeping Mayfield in check. They're also banking on Georgia being able to establish the run. Right now, I'm going to wait until game day. I don't have an opinion right now, but I'll put it up on the website at gamedaysportsradio.com. So just look for a Rose Bowl selection. Have it posted on New Year's Day around noon.
Okay, well, if they're banking on the Georgia defense keeping Baker Mayfield in check, that's going to be a tough task for the Dogs because Mayfield always seems to find a way to be productive no matter the circumstance. The Sooners' lone loss to Iowa State, that was on the defense, not on Baker and the offense. You don't give up 20 points in the second half to a team and expect to win the football game. They were up. The Sooners were up 17. Their defense lost it for him. Mayfield, he'll be a factor in this game, even though insiders say he's been battling a stomach virus the last few days. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's going to be time for the Weber Mortgage Spotlight Game Preview, which is the Sugar Bowl between Clemson and Alabama.
The best in sports talk and analysis is at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Every week, Mike Menard and longtime college coach Boji Wood break down the biggest matchups in both college football and the NFL. GameDaySportsRadio.com features interviews with top coaches, as well as current and former players. Get all the information you want in one place. GameDaySportsRadio.com. Previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games are just a click away at GameDaySportsRadio.com.
Picking college football winners every time isn't easy, but picking the right mortgage company is. Weber Mortgage has been helping people buy homes since 1999. Literally thousands of people are living in their dream homes with the help of Weber Mortgage. I'm Michael Weber, and using Weber Mortgage is a sure bet. If you're thinking about buying a home this year, call 205-823-6701 or visit us at webermortgage.com. That's 205-823-6701 for Weber Mortgage.
You're listening to Inside the Numbers with Bogey Wood. Catch a replay of this show at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Hear interviews with coaches as well as current and former players, plus previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games. It's all at GameDaySportsRadio.com. That's GameDaySportsRadio.com.
Welcome back to Inside the Numbers. It's time in the show for the Weber Mortgage Spotlight Game preview. And it's no surprise, the Weber Mortgage Spotlight Game this week is the Sugar Bowl, the semifinal between Clemson and Alabama. The Rose Bowl, they'll decide one of the finalists in the afternoon. And then the Sugar Bowl on New Year's night will decide the other one. Of course, Alabama and Clemson meeting for the third straight year in the playoffs. The Tigers are defending champions after beating the Tide 35-31 in last year's game. The Tigers are the number one seed. Bama's the number four seed. But Mike Menard, for some reason, those guys out in Vegas, they've got Alabama favored to win this game.
That's right, Coach. Clemson did actually open as a one-point favorite at most casinos. The public went to the window, and they moved Alabama up to a small favorite, around three, actually. Basically, the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl, they're complete toss-up games because the four teams are rated so closely in Vegas, even the sharps can't find value in these games.
Well, these two teams, I mean, they've played neck and neck for the last 2 years. And Coach Dabo Swinney, he's got that Clemson program really where the Alabama program is. You know, they don't have to rebuild. They just reload every year. They lost numerous players to the NFL after last year's championship, and they're in the hunt again. Of course, Alabama, they've been in the playoff each of the first 4 years. This is the third straight year the Tide and Tigers have met, but it's the first time that the winner won't immediately be crowned the national champion.
That's right, and this is the rubber match. The Tide beat Clemson in 15. Tigers, of course, won last year, and this year's winner is going to play either Georgia or Oklahoma. And again, four great teams that are so closely rated, it's a toss-up. As for Clemson, reloading as opposed to rebuilding, Coach, I think the turning point was the 2012 Orange Bowl. Clemson got annihilated. They gave up 10 touchdowns and 70 points to West Virginia. Dabo brought in Venables as defensive coordinator, and he really, in my opinion, started the trend of massive contracts for assistant coaches. And since they gave up 70 to West Virginia, the Tigers, 6-1 in bowl games with wins over LSU, 2 wins over Ohio State, 2 wins over Oklahoma, and a win over Alabama. Clemson defense of 2017, night and day from the one we saw in Miami 6 years ago.
It is, and a lot of the blame was put on Kevin Steele, and no doubt the 70 points the Mountaineers put up on Clemson was ugly. And as defensive coordinator, Kevin Steele took the blame, and it cost him his job. But it's really wrong to paint that year's Clemson defense or Steele in a bad light. You got to look at first-year offensive coordinator Chad Morris. He was still trying to find his stride at the college game. Clemson didn't just get blown out in the bowl game. They were 2-4 over their last six games that year, and the offense struggled in five of those games. Now, you never know what the magic formula is. I mean, Steele, who's a great defensive coach, you see what they're doing at Auburn right now. But you can't discount what Brent Venables brought to Clemson. It's all about timing, because Brent Venables, he was happy at Oklahoma, worked many years side by side with Bob and Mike Stoops. And then when Mike Stoops left Oklahoma to go take the job at Arizona, Venables became the defensive coordinator, not co-defensive coordinators. But guess what? After a few years, Mike gets fired at Arizona. Bob brings him back to Norman. And again, personally, I feel that Brent felt crowded and he was ready to make a move. And listen, it's worked out quite well for all parties involved. Mike Stoops and the Sooners. Mike's the defensive coordinator there for the Sooners still. They're in one semifinal. Brent and the Tigers are in another. And Kevin Steele, obviously, he seems to have found a home at Auburn. Hey, his defense shut out three of the four semifinalists. They gave up 14 to Clemson, 17 to Georgia in the regular season game, and Georgia got a late garbage score, and Alabama only got 14 against his defense. And I know that they gave up 28 to Georgia in the SEC championship game, but they had absolutely no help from the offense with an injured Kerryon Johnson out. Let's go ahead and bring in the president of Weber Mortgage, Michael Weber. Michael, hope you had a great Christmas. As always, it's good to have you on.
Thank you, man. Happy New Year's Eve day or something like that. Has anybody even thought about the fact that New Year's coming with this kind of football being played? I don't even know if anybody knows that it's almost 2018.
I'm in total agreement with you there. I tell you, it's always crazy for me at this time of year. I just lose track of the days. And somewhere between the week before Christmas and the week after New Year's, I couldn't tell you what day it was.
Yeah, I bet, for sure.
Mike, what about this?
Going to be an exciting one, boys.
Yeah, I think so. I was going to ask you. You know, you've seen these last two matchups, Alabama and Clemson. You know, everybody looks at the last couple of years, but they've played a lot over the years.
They have. Bama leads this all-time series 13-4. They've lost three of their last four in the Superdome, but the win that they had in that Superdome was BCS title game over LSU. Dabo, of course, going back to the Superdome and the Sugar Bowl, he was a walk-on wide receiver for Bama in 92. And, you know, guys, obviously as an alum, there have been several years, not so much the last couple, but before that, where a lot of people felt like, a lot of Alabama fans, I would say, felt like Dabo was sort of like the coach in waiting. Whenever Saban left, Dabo would be the natural choice to come in and lead the Tide. But that was really before he got to the level of success that he has gotten to and brought Clemson to. And now Lord willing, Saban never leaves Alabama if you're a Bama fan. They've got him propped up against the goalpost like the bear, you know. But at some point, you know, you'd love to have that. But if he could sustain this success at Clemson, I can't imagine a reason that you would leave the position that he's put in there, other than, you know, Bear's famous mama's calling. So, this is a really interesting wrinkle to me just because we have – I know a lot of Clemson folks. In fact, you know, I'm good friends with somebody who is in direct family with Dabo, and this is such a fascinating matchup just because of Dabo's background. And it was fascinating the first time or two that happened, but now it's almost become an annual tradition, right? It's like turkey at Thanksgiving. We see an Alabama and Clemson playing in the postseason. So it's fascinating. And this year, I'm sure, is going to be no different. It's going to be just an exciting game that comes down to probably the last possession.
I'm in agreement with you there, Michael. I think this should be another classic. I certainly don't see a blowout coming on either side. And, of course, both Clemson and Alabama have had have history of blowing teams out in the semifinals of the playoffs. I don't see that happening. I think this is going to be another instant classic type game. Now, one thing you were talking about, the BCS title win over LSU, much has been made that Nick Saban has not won a Sugar Bowl as the Alabama head coach. I don't think that's going to have much to do with this game, but I do think it's an interesting fact. The other thing is, you mentioned Dabo coming back to Alabama one day, maybe. I think that you have to look at this almost like the old Vince Dooley coming back to Auburn. Back in 1981, everyone thought that Coach Dooley would make the trip back over to Auburn because Mama was calling. But again, he had built something up at Georgia. He had such a program built at Georgia, and he had Herschel Walker in the backfield. It was kind of hard to walk away from that, and I don't blame him for staying in Georgia. So if and when that time ever comes, you know, it's going to be a tough tough decision for Dabo, and of course the natural pull of coming back to your alma mater. But at the same time, what he has built at Clemson is just phenomenal, and I don't see any end to it anytime soon. And speaking of building programs, Michael, you guys there at Weber Mortgage, y'all not one and done. Y'all have built this thing from the ground up, and you are every single week, y'all are winning in the mortgage business game, helping people get into the right mortgage.
Coach, my father started this company October 20th of 1999, so we're 18-plus years into this thing, and I've been fortunate to be a part of it since 2002. We've continued to grow. We've grown to a size where we have a lot of resources that we can provide, but not to such a size that we're some kind of battleship that's hard to turn. So when decisions need to be made and processes need to be changed in order to adapt to a very, very changing industry, we have the flexibility to do that because of our size and because we're a local company. So, yeah, we're very blessed to be where we are. We're one of the few true brokers that still exist in the state of Alabama and in the Birmingham market. And we're part of this broker network that we talk about each week, where we have connections all over the country. So we're thrilled to be able to help people all across the great state of Alabama, and we're excited to have this broker network of people all across the country, so that anybody who's listening can call us. And whether they're buying a house, you know, 2018, the projections are that it's going to be a great year to buy a house. We're seeing property values going up. So getting in early on that rise is imperative if you want to maximize your value. So I think we're going to see a lot of people move this year. The interest rates will be going up, but right now they're still extremely low from a standpoint of a 30-year loan. I think the average is well over 7% over the last 30 years through Fannie Mae, and we're still in the fours. So we're in the low fours and the high threes. So it's just going to be a great year. If somebody out there is thinking about buying or refinancing a home, we hope they'll give us a call at 205-823-6701. If they're in the state of Alabama, we'll work with them personally, and if they're outside the state, we'll connect them with somebody who will take just as good care of them.
And, of course, you can go on GameDaySportsRadio.com. You can follow the Weber Mortgage link right to the site. You can do a lot of preliminary work even before you pick up the phone and call. But, again, it's easy to get in touch with Weber Mortgage no matter where you are in the nation. If you're listening to the show, they can help get you straightened out and get you to someone who can help you get into a great mortgage situation. All right, Michael, I've got to ask you. I know you're an Alabama alum, big Crimson Tide fan, but take those crimson-colored glasses off for a moment. How do you see this game being played out?
Well, my pupils are actually crimson, so it's hard to take off. But I think the difference in this game and last year's game is at the quarterback position for Clemson. I think the downfield strike is more of a variable this year than it was last year, with one of the most incredible quarterbacks that we've seen play in college football last year. So I think these short passes are going to be a little bit easier for Alabama to contain, especially if their linebackers are back at near full strength, like we believe they will be. I think the outcome of this game hangs on Jalen Hurts. I was not impressed with his play in the Iron Bowl. I felt like he didn't have his best game last year in this game, even though he did some things that kept him in the game. I didn't think there was a lot of downfield consistency on Alabama's part. In the end, I think it's a toss-up if I'm looking at it objectively, but being an alum, obviously, I'm going to take Alabama, and I'll even lay whatever points you got in this one. I think Saban's got a lot to prove. I think Hurts has a lot to prove, and I think under a new offensive coordinator, Alabama has really done a better job moving the football, even though I think they're going to have to do some clock possession in this game, because Clemson's offense is just – if they let them stay on the field – and they can't get off the field on third downs, if Alabama's defense can't get off the field on third downs and convert on third downs, it's going to be tough. But I'm going to take the Tide.
Okay, Mike Bernard, you heard Michael Weber. He's going to take the Tide as an alum, but he really feels the game's a toss-up, as you've kind of said that. And everyone points back to this benchmark of the 2012 Orange Bowl for Clemson. I mean, you know, how does all that factor into the way you see things?
Well, guys, when I look at it, first of all, you know, all the points have been made, and those are good points that you've talked with me off the air and what Michael Weber talked about. But I really feel like Bryant and Hurts, both they're going against great defenses, and they're both going to force them or attempt to force them to throw downfield. So who knows what's going to happen there, because neither quarterback has shown consistency in that area. But, Coach, you were talking about the 2012, and I'll keep referring back to that because I feel like that's when they got their identity. And a lot of it, and it wasn't to bash Kevin Steele or those defensive players, a lot of it was, you know, just culture. And the culture changed. Since that point, Clemson's covered 7 straight bowl games, and they've won 8 straight non-conference games. Now, Alabama, they have a good record when they're coming off a loss. They're coming off a loss to Auburn. But coming off a loss against the point spread, they're only 3-14. So when they lose, the next game out, they only covered 3 of their last 17 against the spread. Of course, the line's real low this year in this game. The Sugar Bowl, the Rose Bowl, they're so tough to call. When I break down this game, it handicaps to the under. But, hey, the last 2 meetings, these teams put up scores of points. So I'm probably going to pass on the total. I'm going to have to wait until game day, see if there's any significant line movement to try and find value here as a handicapper. Just my thought is, as just a college football fan, I think I'm going to lean to Alabama here, but I feel like Clemson's the more complete team.
Okay, Michael Weber, you heard Mike Benardi thinks Clemson is the more complete team. And, you know, I think this game's going to come down to turnovers. I think that's going to be the difference, a big play. Everyone goes back and looks at the game out in Phoenix 2 years ago. I think the turning point in that game was the onside kick, and that's just like a turnover. You're taking away a possession from the other team. I think if they kick the ball deep or Clemson gets that onside kick, I think Clemson probably wins that game. But again, that's you know, all it's always easy to look back, and as Coach Dye used to say, hindsight always 50-50. That's the way that is the way that works. But guys, listen, no matter who wins the semis, I think there's some interesting side notes in this national championship playoff this year. If you end up having Clemson and Georgia, of course, you've got backyard neighbors. They're only about 70 miles apart, and they'll be both of them be taking Georgia's about an hour from Mercedes-Benz Stadium there in Atlanta. Clemson's about 2 hours. And Kirby Smart will be facing Clemson again in the national championship game, but this time he'll be wearing a red coaching shirt instead of a crimson coaching shirt. Clemson, Oklahoma, Clemson defense coordinator Brent Venables, if that happens, he gets to go and play his former employer. If Alabama and Oklahoma meet, everyone remembers when Oklahoma dissed the SEC and beat Bama 45-31. In the 2014 Sugar Bowl, I believe it was. And listen, there's still some bad blood left over from that game, even though the seniors on this team were freshmen and redshirt freshmen back then. If you talk about Alabama and Georgia, you got too many to list them all. Of course, Nick Saban, you got the Kirby Smart connection. The most interesting thing to me is the Jeremy Pruitt factor. He's already been named Tennessee's head coach for the third straight year. Bama's had a coordinator pulling double duty, trying to serve two masters. Kirby and Georgia, they were able to pull it off to Saban's satisfaction. Lane Kiffin in Florida Atlantic, not so much. But Jeremy Pruitt, he will not shortchange the Bama squad. And whatever happens with Alabama, it won't be because Jeremy Pruitt wasn't all in for this run. Now, think about this. If it ends up being Alabama and Georgia, as soon as the game is over, Pruitt puts on his orange coaching gear and goes to work rebuilding the Volunteers. Guess who else does? All he has to do is look across the sideline. Georgia linebacker coach Kevin Shearer, he's going to be named defensive coordinator at Tennessee as soon as the Bulldog season's in. I'm telling you, it's more complex than a 1980 soap opera. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back on Inside the Numbers.
Picking college football winners every time isn't easy, but picking the right mortgage company is. Weber Mortgage has been helping people buy homes since 1999. Literally thousands of people are living in their dream homes with the help of Weber Mortgage. I'm Michael Weber, and using Weber Mortgage is a sure bet. If you're thinking about buying a home this year, call 205-823-6701 or visit us at webermortgage.com. That's 205-823-6701 for Weber Mortgage.
The best in sports talk and analysis is at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Every week, Mike Menard and longtime college coach Boji Wood break down the biggest matchups in both college football and the NFL. GameDaySportsRadio.com features interviews with top coaches, as well as current and former players. Get all the information you want in one place. GameDaySportsRadio.com. Previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games are just a click away at GameDaySportsRadio.com.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Inside the Numbers. I'd like to thank Michael Weber, president of Weber Mortgage, along with Mike Menard of OTM Sports. And, of course, I want to thank all of the GameDaySportsRadio.com staff and you for tuning in. Until next week, I'm Boji Wood saying so long and Happy New Year.